Welcome to Big Blend Radio's first Friday Toast to the Arts and Park Show with the National Parks Arts Foundation, who are known for their amazing artist residencies in parks across the country. Welcome, everybody. Today, we are going to talk about Chaco Canyon, which is also known as Chaco Culture National Historical Park. And we're going to be talking with an artist who is a poet. And it's April, which is Poetry Month. Very important. But we're going to talk with a lady that is going there as an artist in residence for a full month in April. And in fact, as we air this, she will be there. But right now, she's getting ready to literally pack her bags and go to Chaco. So today we're very excited to welcome Carissa. Carissa is known as Lucky. Carissa Garcia. She is a writer, a performing artist, a organizer. Oh, her bio is insane. We'll just get into it. So welcome, Carissa. How are you?
Hi. Thanks, Lisa. I am doing great. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I was checking out your website and the work that you and your mom do. And I just think it's so exciting and fascinating. And I'm just really happy to be a part of this journey with you.
Well, we're excited about your journey going to Chaco. And by the way, is it Carissa or Carissa? I should have asked that beforehand. Where are my manners?
Both work just fine. Carissa okay. is fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is interesting. As a poet, I want to just touch on this. It's Poetry Month. And I know I mentioned this before we started that big record button called Zoom. It's just not a big record button anymore. We talked about the importance of women in poetry, and it used to be kind of thought as poetry was kind of a kind of leisurely activity that women did, with high tea, know, back in the day. And yet we all know that's not the case, right? We have so many amazing women poets in history. I mean, there's huge, it's a huge roster. But when you think about poetry, there's this fluffy version. But from our way of life now, Nancy and I, through traveling and then going to poetry slams and just going to readings and reading poetry too, and doing all these interviews with poets, it's really come to my attention that women are some badass. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the show, but since we do it, we can. Are badass. They don't just put, and the flowers were, pink and purple and make it rhyme all pretty, right? Poetry has kind of evolved, wouldn't you say, over the years for women, especially.
Yeah, I definitely would agree. I would also say that the fluffy, beautiful, nature-based poetry is wonderful as well. And I
yes,
think
it is.
That there is a skill to being so acutely aware to our surroundings and zooming into those and being able to express those poetically. I also feel like poetry is much like any other artistic medium where we are communicating life. We are communicating the state of our world through art and through our own consciousness. And I think that's really important, especially as poets of color, to document not just our struggles, but our joys and our resistance and our persistence throughout history. And I think poetry is a really meaningful and can be a very beautiful way to do that as well. And we've seen through slam culture and the evolution of poetry and spoken word that, poets are in fact documenting what is going on around us and putting it out there. In a way that people, and especially young people, can grab onto and understand and relate to.
Wouldn't you even think like hip hop wouldn't exist without poetry?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think lyrical music would exist without poetry.
Yeah, Bob Dylan. Like, come on.
I think that Yeah, I don't know. I think it was John Lennon. It might have been Paul McCartney who said, you know, songs are just poems with a melody. And I believe that. And, you know, I've written a few songs myself and they start as poems and sometimes they start as songs. But I think when we poetry is can be stripped down, we can strip down other forms of art and, you know, and at the core, we have this language that we are working with. And we can put that language onto a canvas. We can put it onto a piece of paper or through voice or onto an instrument. And art in various forms is its own language. And when we can apply our spoken and written languages to those, you know, it becomes very special. I've done shows in the past with musicians, and I really hope to continue down that path where, you know, some amazing musicians have backed me up with their instruments and their gifts as you know, words are flowing out of me. And sometimes you get into this poetic and musical marriage that is just incredible. And we, you know, we've seen a lot of that kind of like in the late 60s, you know, with a lot of the Black poets and musicians, and we're also seeing that revival. I think we have been seeing it for, you know, several years now, and I'm really excited to see where poetry is going. I mean, we have beat poets, we've got short form poetry. There's, you know, all kinds of ways to even explore poetry. And that's very exciting for me as a writer, to explore different areas of poetry that maybe I haven't, given a lot of time to, but
Yeah, I
also.
mean, I was going to say it's also like you said, it can be the flowery form, right?
Right,
It can
absolutely.
span all of it. All of it is beautiful, but it just kind of at one point it was like that's the women's like little frivolous activity, you
Yeah,
know,
and
back in the day. Yeah, and it's
we
like
can talk about, you know, life, and we can talk about issues, and we can talk about, you know, feelings and systems and all of that in poetics. But, you know, there is nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with taking a moment to recognize beauty and share that, you
Well, we
know.
have to have that. Isn't that part of what drives us to do better and to fix things? I mean, I'm looking at your bio is I mean, you've done so much. You've also, you know, fought in Iraq war. I mean, look at this. People will not really, you know, when they think, oh, you went to war, so you're in that mode. So there's boxes that people put people into, right? Oh, you were in this box, you're in that box, you're in this box, right? But that doesn't mean you went to Iraq, you served our country, you served people, you went for peace, but that doesn't mean you don't look at the flower that you're trying to hold in peace, right? And so it's kind of this interesting thing. And I think poetry is a form of storytelling. Whether it
Absolutely.
goes into music or not, it's storytelling. And when you think about your cultural history, your ancestry, Chicana, Indigenous, that's part of your being. So you can be a warrior and a peacemaker at the same time. And do you feel that as a poet and as a human being that you straddle those two, and poetry is part of that balance at all? Of communication in a way.
Sure. I think that, you know, I want to say early on in my public poet career as a writer and poet, I felt that straddle and that the unstable, like trying to maintain balance between those worlds. But over time, it's all become one because I am one person and that is all of me. And, you know, poetry has been extremely helpful and therapeutic in my healing journey from the military and from the Iraq War. And not just poetry, but that, you know, art combined with reestablishing my connection to the land and to my culture, also with having really strong community and supportive community around me, and, you know, having really good therapy as well, and teaching me how to decondition from the military, and how to respect and love myself and find a new respect in myself. And so I think all of those elements really have been what has been healing for me after the Iraq War. And then, you know, at first I was just, I've been writing poetry and stories since I was a small child. I think when I was in the third grade, I was writing and binding my own books.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And when I went into the Army, a lot changed for me. I was in the Army for 8 years, and
wow.
I didn't write much at all.
And
so it wasn't until I, you know, came home, and then I was very sick for several years post-war. And so just poetry gave me a path to express myself and really like get out what I needed to say in a cathartic way. But not just in like a self-indulgence way, but more of like, I've been to the belly of the beast, I've seen these things, I've learned these things, I can zoom out and apply, you know, the Iraq War with U.S. imperialism, with other wars and other issues around the world, and then ultimately apply that to understanding settler colonialism and the genocide of my own people. And so poetry gave me this path to heal, to express myself, but also to put out a message to as many people as I could, as a way of, you know, one of the many ways that I have committed to honoring my victims from the Iraq War.
Well, I just think, you know, when you look at going through war, right? There is a place to, you need to have a moment to regroup because it's survival mode.
Absolutely.
Right. And then how do you shed survival mode?
Right.
You know, how do you get past that? And I think the arts have always been a way to not only get past survival mode, but to, because you have to at some point shed the survival mode, which is one of the hardest things to do in life, is to shed survival mode. It's like this armor that you wear. And it's heavy as hell. It's brutal. And eventually starts, it's like the armor starts to dig into your skin, into your soul, eventually.
Right. It can be debilitating. And not only can it be debilitating for the veteran, but, you know, my trauma from the Iraq War has had significant impact on you know, my physical health, my mental health, my family, my community. And, you know, it really has this exponential effect. And trying to get out of that survival mode and heal from the damage done to us as veterans, I mean, sorry to stutter there, but like It is a lifelong thing. This is something that I understand. I have to very intentionally work this for the rest of my life. And like I said, through, you know, really good therapy and art and community and, you know, the love of my family and friends, it makes it a lot easier for me here in 2024 to navigate my trauma and how that affects me today. It's a lot easier with all of that behind me, with all the support than it was the first, you know, 5 years coming out of the war. It's a process for sure.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've done a lot of podcasts on it, and on so many levels. But I do believe personally, from just being in life, right? Being part of life, and from what we've gone through too, the arts are amazing outlets of truth, but they're also amazing truth communicators. Storytelling helps the storyteller, and it also helps people to get it. In storytelling, like, you could tell, I mean, it also tells the truth, right? It tells the bold truth. I think most music and art and poetry and books, even if it's historical fiction, is still telling the truth of what people were going through at that time. So do you feel that about your work, that, hey, this is a form of truth here, even if I may change the color of the rose, you know, if I want to, because I can, because that's the beauty of the arts, is you are allowed to create what the heck you want. But there's always this true seed of truth, right? And that's what the person taking in the art will eventually find. Some find it immediately, some people find it later, and some people never, because maybe they're just not connected with it, you know, and you're allowed to not connect with arts. Like, sometimes it's just not your cup of tea. And that's, I think that was one of the best sayings ever. Because it just, sometimes some art music doesn't resonate with you. Some people hate Neil Young. I love Neil Young. I know he annoys the heck out of my mother, but I love him. But, you know, and he annoys others, but whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It actually makes for a good conversation.
I do think that, you know, art and poetry being a messages of truth, for sure. I also think that, you know, we need to acknowledge that perspective in there. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, gotten a lot of static, including many death threats and threats of violence around my truth telling, from, you know, the political or my evaluation, my perspective of my experiences in the military and in the war. And I think it's important that, like, you know, is there really one version of the truth, or do we all have this perspective and access to information in a different way as each person? You know, my experience in Iraq was, you know, could have been a common experience among some people, but not among others. So, you know, it doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't make it untrue. It makes it my experience. And and that experience is very true to me and is very true to my family and my community. And I think that artists do have a responsibility, when, especially when we kind of engage in public platform, to, we have a responsibility to tell the truth. We have a responsibility to share perspective and really open people's eyes and open up their worldview to what they may not be seeing, especially with how restricted and confined American mainstream media is.
So in what's hard too, right? So we have mainstream media and they're all paid off basically, right? So
Well,
we all
they're
know.
all owned by the same few
They're all
people.
owned, right? But when it comes to the truth tellers, which are the artists and the independents like us, we're independent, you have to have some chutzpah. Let's put it, that's the good word, the chutzpah to go out front, to be able to share this knowledge, this story, this piece of art, to do this. But at the same time, you have to take the ego and shove it. Whereas the mainstream media is like, here's my ego and I'm making the money with the ego. And so that's why I just find this, it's such a level of importance of an artist, because the heart is on the sleeve. It is, it's out there. And it is like when someone is performing, and I know you're a performing artist as well, I would like to hear about that. People could be performing, and if someone gets up while you're performing and saying, here's my poem, right? And someone gets up and walks out during that, that's rude as hell. There are some manners that we were taught as kids that need to still be back in session. I'm just saying,
It happened though.
but it happens. But it can we quell our stuff as human beings, so as in the artist form of, you may, I mean, unless you had to go to the bathroom really bad, like you're gonna, oops, I whatever in my pants, that kind of mode or whatever. But honestly, there's a certain level of, sometimes even if you don't like something, sit it out because you may learn something. And sometimes the things that really gnaw and piss you off are exactly what you need to have for that
What you
day.
need to hear, right? I actually have had that happen to me while I've been on stage, and it's always happens in while during one of my war poems, my poems about my war experience or my experience in as a soldier, and I think people like that are just not ready to hear anything different than what they've always been told and what they found security and what they found privilege in and what they found power in. And I tend to be in my poetry, and especially in my poetry around war and imperialism, I tend to be that mirror. I want to show. I want to be up
Oh,
there
are
and
you the
mirror.
inconvenient truth?
It can be, and but I also want to really give credit to the people who do stick around, who wanted to leave, or who do feel uncomfortable, and the people who lean into that. It's one thing for me to go do a show where I know I'm totally supported and all of that, and then it's another thing to do a show where I might not be totally supported, but I have, talked with a lot of people who have been in the audience who have said, I wanted to leave and I really disagreed with you, but I stuck around and I see this in a different way. Or now I have language on how to talk with my children about these issues. Or I didn't realize that saying thank you for your service was so insulting, and now I
Oh,
understand where
see,
you're
that's a
coming from.
very interesting thing. We've talked about that on shows. Thank
Yeah,
you
I
for your
wrote a poem
service.
about it, and that was actually one of the pieces where somebody did like get up and scream at me and leave the auditorium, and that's okay. I mean, they'll either come around to it or not, and I frankly I don't care, because the other 100 people that were in that auditorium stayed there and listened, and I hope that maybe a few of them kind of broadened their view or were able to see a different perspective.
Well, It's such a drummed into your head thing. Always thank for your service. And I do thank you for what you've done because I don't want to go to Iraq and, do all that. Hell no. So, I mean, even like right now, we're, as people know, we travel the country and we pet sit along the way. We're pet sitting for a veterinarian who travels and does surgeries on animals all over the place. And I'm like, thank you,
Right.
because I'm not going to play with a dog's brain. It's not happening, but I'll, excuse me, I will help the animal on the other side, so everybody's got their thing. And a lot of times it's not something we want. And I think it's also been a whole evolution for women being in the military and a woman of color being in the military. Like, and then wait, are we going to go to the LGBTQ
Sure.
part of life and then be in the military?
Yeah,
Sorry, but.
it's my identities and having, being a marginalized person in society, all of those where all of those intersect, including being a combat veteran and including being a disabled veteran, where all of those intersect, I find is quite a unique place to be. Unique in what it requires to be safe and find health and happiness and to navigate life in such a violent and occupied state that we are in. But it also presents a unique space from which for me to speak. And I feel like because that is a unique space that my voice can and should be out there. I also feel like it gives me somewhat of a superpower to communicate with people also of those identities and support my community as well. I write about all of that. I write about being a veteran. I write about my love. I write about culture and and I think that even my poems about love or nature can be a little twisted because I fought in a war and that changes you. It changes
Well,
just
yeah,
how you see the world.
I lived through Africa stuff, and I've been through it, a lot of stuff, and anger comes as a side carrier that you don't want, and it's an evil little bitch that does poke her head out or his head, whatever. It could be whatever gender it wants to be at any day and does its thing. And that's part of, it's like a side effect of whatever. And especially when you're living something true, you put your heart and soul into something, whether it's being a veteran or your art or anything in life. And you go 100% and beyond 100%. Because there is a beyond the 100%. There's a 200%.
Absolutely.
There's a 300%. There is an affinity thing. That's why they say about shattering glass ceilings, because that's all, man-made stuff.
Man-made,
We made the numbers, the plants didn't. So anyway, that little anger side is there, which is part of that survival mode. And then getting out of the survival mode, there's anger that comes out of a emotional side. And it is always around when you go through a lot. And so, a lot of times in art, there's anger and it needs to be there. It has a place, it can't be ignored. How do you balance that in your art and storytelling? That anger has to be there because if there's no anger, then there's no passion for change, right? So, anger is part of that. And then how do you not have too much anger to not have an audience anymore? You know what I mean? Like, how do you balance it? How do we balance anger? Because anger is a bitch. Like, I'm
It
sorry.
really
She is.
is.
Sorry, everybody, for the language, but it's really that. I don't know a better term at this point. I'm not the poet.
anger is another one of those things that can be debilitating. And my first several years after returning from the war, I was debilitated by my anger. And I led a very unhealthy and destructive life, and nearly lost my life several times, and was able to lift myself out of that again through with the support and love of my therapist and my community and my family and my art. And I think that for myself, personally, I really am intentional about processing my anger in a healthy ways, because I think that it is our lives and our mental health and our emotional health are so fragile sometimes when it comes to anger that, the slightest move in the wrong direction can be really harmful to somebody else if I'm expressing my anger. And I've never been a very angry person. I do the opposite, right? I internalize it, and now we're finding out that that causes cancer and heart disease and all that.
God,
So for
Doug, you're raising
me,
my blood pressure already.
right, I'm trying to, I really try to get it out in a healthy way that's not harmful to other people. And I do that through performance and through my activism. I feel that where I feel most anger is when I am looking at the state of the world and our country, and looking at poverty and hunger and houselessness and our rights being stripped away every day. And to be honest, I feel like I do a really good job of keeping my anger in check and letting it wash through me through meditation and my spirituality and, just
Cool.
being out with nature. I like give it to the sky, I give it to the water, and give it to the trees, and they'll transform it into oxygen. And but what I'm finding lately is that I am feeling a lot of anger, and I'm feeling a lot of anger around the genocide in Palestine, especially as an Iraq war veteran. And looking at that and seeing the atrocities and just being so completely infuriated and angry and disgusted with what's happening there, and then putting that together, like the genocide in Palestine is directly related to the genocide of my people, which is directly related to the Iraq wars. It's directly related to why we have people starving in this country and houseless, and it's all connected. And I so naively thought that we would collectively have learned from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and to be witnessing from far away, but witnessing what's going on with the genocide in Palestine. I can't help but feel that, what I did in the war or these wars alone are just in vain. They really are just to crush people and steal their resources. And I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with that at all. And I feel like, as an artist, as an activist, as anybody with any kind of platform, and especially as an Indigenous person, I have a responsibility to speak up about it and to offer whatever I can in the form of my resistance.
We just did an interview with Mike Guardi, who is a veteran as well. And he's we have a Military Monday show every first Monday. And he's been on our show for years, and he writes books and he tells the stories from the soldiers' perspectives so that people like me who have no clue about war tactics start to learn and understand what a soldier goes through, and men and women, and around the world on different levels. He's pretty amazing. He was just on the History Channel and doing like he's a consultant there, and our recent interview, which just aired before yours, even though we're recording it beforehand, right? Is on Timothy McVeigh. And he was on the History Channel about that, and we were talking about it because this happened in April. And 168 people blew up because a veteran came out, and we look at what happens, and this guy just, you read the story about what and what he believed and what he did, and this is not like a PTSD situation. This is someone who was into a militia and all of that. And it's really important. People knew about his stuff and never spoke up.
Yeah.
And this is the importance. And I really appreciate with National Parks Arts Foundation that they allow artists to be artists, who they are, what they are. And anger doesn't go anywhere, but telling the truth and art just transcends. And sometimes you'll read a poem and it'll nag at you and you may get pissy with it. There's music I hated and now I love. It's like, when you were a kid, you didn't like coffee and then you did, or it's same as wine. Now I like it all. But anyway, things come through stages. Everybody's ready for truth when they're ready for truth.
Yeah.
Right? You can't force truth onto somebody. You can't force anything onto anybody no matter what it is. It could be a psychological rape, It just, you can't force anything on anybody and make it work. You can't force sex on somebody and expect it to be a wonderfully romantic night. That doesn't work, right? So I'm just putting it blatantly. And so I think with art, there's this level of one, it like sometimes it's a seed. And I know this from doing what we do in publications. It takes 10 times for someone to even think about actually clicking on something or listening or reading. It takes that much. And then to take action, oh, good Lord, now we need to tell you about it again. And we've created this whole culture of advertising because of how our brains as humans work.
Right.
That's the truth. Can't help it. But as artists, as anybody in the creative field, you here's this magical poem. I'm going to perform it. I'm going to do this. And, it's going to have to resonate there in that day. Or if you have it written down, that's awesome. People can resonate later. And by the way, it could be 10 years down the road that somebody finally gets your poem.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
Know what I mean? And that is such a son of a gun,
But
sorry,
you know, when it's time,
language.
It's
I mean,
time.
Good.
Yeah.
It is. And that's the thing with art. And sometimes it just isn't a match, just
right.
Like people aren't a match romantically, right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, until it is,
yeah, it could be in another life.
Right.
You know?
And we grow, right? We grow in our awareness and our worldviews and our consciousness. It all expands as we're growing and aging and our life experience. And so what resonates at one time may, what doesn't resonate at one time may resonate later. But I also like, I've written many poems, about being a soldier and my war experience and my experience after returning from the war. And a lot of times, some of my pieces, they're all kind of about the same thing. But, there's one piece that mothers really relate to. And there's another piece that young people really relate to. And there's another piece that, political activists relate to. And I feel like I'm just kind of saying the same things, but in different expressions. But people will pick what connects with them. And I think that's like the beauty of art is being able to communicate with so many different people, of so many different backgrounds, of so many different views, and we can all kind of find common ground in the arts. I think not just as an artist, but just as a human on this planet today, one of the most difficult things, period, for me is just trying to get other people to give a damn about other people.
Well, good luck with that. No, I think no, there definitely are people who, I mean, I think it is, and but people go according to their group, according to their community, their family, their this, their that. And it just the general population is a very big picture for people because it's like, what about me? What about my little spot? Are we having people coming in here? Like, how there's people coming into my territory? And we're becoming very territorial now as human beings. And so that's where I want to kind of shift that conversation to Chaco, which is where you're going as the next artist in residence of Chaco Culture National Historical Park, poet in residence for spring. This is an amazing, I, when I say amazing, no, it's not about being Yosemite, but I mean it is beautiful, absolutely drop dead gorgeous, out there. I love the Southwest, so this whole area to me is very special. It's very rugged but tender, and it's just spiritually. If you go there and don't feel something, like you need to go, I don't know, get some help somewhere because there's something there. You got to go check yourself, like. But this whole region, and you know, I talked to you before we started recording about you being a veteran, and then being Gallup is so huge in World War II history and the Navajo Code Talkers. I hope you get down to Gallup when you're there too. But Chaco and Aztec ruins, which are very connected, and I always think they should be one part connected, but that's not how the system works. But going there is a huge thing when you think about, you know, how old these are ancestral people that we're talking about that
Ancient
were there.
people, right?
Ancient,
And first
ancient history.
people.
I always think about that. I always talk about ancient. And then I always go like, well, what makes it ancient? Is this dinosaur years? Like, you know what I mean? Because people also will come out at you and go like, that's not ancient. This is that, you know, whatever. But when you think about ancestral footsteps, this is your land. You're going home in a way, right?
Indeed, and this is incredibly meaningful and important to me, just from a place of culture and history and connection to my land and to my culture and my ancestors, my people. The art opportunity is also incredible. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But personally, this is, I feel like I could go to Chaco another time, but like to be able to spend a month there and really dig in, is this like once in a lifetime opportunity for me and to connect in a way with complete openness, as open as I can be to the land and the history and to my ancestral connection is really exciting for me. I'm a little nervous, I'm not gonna lie.
I'm kind of nervous for you too. I'm
But
like, well, like I was thinking about that today before you came on the show, and I'm like, I've been there, you know, but not like I did the Nancy and I were there for a very short amount of time because we only had a short amount of time. And it was, I almost felt rude. I almost felt, I can't explain it, but I felt like you just came in and you did the looky-loo and you left and you're an idiot. And I'm not, we're not idiots. And I know people going there are not in, it's just like, there's a, it's like walking out of the performance halfway through. That's exactly how we felt. It's like, but you get to go there for a whole month and really, like you said, dig in. 'Cause I almost feel like you're, I have a feeling, and this sounds really weird, but your hands are going to have to get in the dirt. You really
Oh,
are going to literally
definitely.
have to dig in.
Oh, yeah. I plan on playing in
Okay.
the dirt and playing with the rocks and everything. I'm very much an outdoors person, so I'll totally be in my element. I also love the Southwest. It's my home. This experience is really important to my family as well, and I've been preparing for months now, and I'm preparing in all the ways, right? Physically, mentally, financially, spiritually, intellectually. But one of the ways that I've prepared is I have kind of interviewed and had some deep discussions with the women in my family. And particularly, this is reminding me of a discussion that I had with my mother and my grandmother. And we got to talk about why this experience of me spending a month in Chaco Canyon and making art is so important to them and what it means to them. And this was something that I just didn't really even realize. I knew they were excited for me. I knew that they were just very supportive of what I'm, trying to do with my art and my life. But we had a conversation about through assimilation, through the erasure of our culture, through the very violent severing of connection to culture and land. My mother, my grandmother, and my great grandmothers, that connection became severed for survival and through assimilation. And of course, our people being tortured into Christianity and those kinds of things that my mother and my grandmother were not able to find their indigeneity and their spirituality in a way that I am so connected.
Oh, that's a good point.
And I feel like I know many, many people of my generation who are doing something similar, who are saying, no, it's not okay for me to not know who I am or where I come from or, the stories of my people or how to steward the land and what that means for a future. And I think that people in my generation are seeing we need to get back to that if we're going to save this planet. And so my experience in doing this is very important to my mother and my grandmother and other people in my family because they haven't had that opportunity and they are learning through me and connecting to their own indigeneity through me. And it's actually very beautiful, Lisa, how that plays out in our lives and in our relationships together.
Oh, that is special. I mean, when I think about like families getting together now, it's like people are like wanting to interview their elders and they don't really know because they've got their phones and they got this. And it's like, no, we have to be this way, and something that you're doing that is really extra special and it's pretty big. Like, you said, I mean, this is life changing. This is one of those moments in life where, whoa, okay, I'm going to ancestral lands of my people and my family and your family is part of this and connected, right? It's a very spiritual thing. And
It really
I don't care what we all have different belief systems, right? But like the spirituality of this place is it's magnetic. That's the word. It's magnetic there
Yeah,
and
it's
magical.
sacred. It's incredibly sacred. This is where my people believe the first peoples came from, and how our first peoples walked. And you know, the Chaco Canyon, and including the Aztec, and including, you know, the surrounding area, I believe really it is critical that we protect this sacred site and other indigenous sacred sites as well. But I really feel like I mean, I'm grateful that Secretary Howland had put in place, you know, protection for Chaco Canyon oil fracking for the next 20 years. But I think it's very, very important that we protect the surrounding area and the tribes, the land, and the people. We must protect them, because 90% of that land has already been, you know, leased out for oil fracking. And it's just so fragile.
And Aztec was in trouble too. We've been covering this for years. In fact, Chaco, even before NPAF was on our shows, we were covering this fracking around Chaco. And then we won, right? All of us, NPCA, National Parks Conservation Association, actually, we were doing shows on it. And then, you know, everybody signs petitions, everything happens, and they win. Lawyers go on. And then you get a new change of order of command, you know, and it reverts immediately back to the same fight. So yes, I'm going to say yes, there's this 20 years thing, but you know, and it can change very quickly.
Our democracy is unstable, you know.
Yeah, so what you may have won in a fight, you know, just that is the way it works. And you just always, that fight is always going to be there. And I think Chaco is, they're zeroing in, but when you go there, I mean, it, like, there is a magnetic, maybe that's why it has good oil or fracking or whatever under there. But like, really, I mean, Shiprock is not far either. Like, it's like this whole area is, it's special. That's all I can say is it's very special. When you go there, you know it. You go, you know, and I think what's so beautiful is, you know, not everyone can go to Chaco from around the world and across the country, go there. And when artists in residence go through the National Parks Arts Foundation, artists are allowed to be their artists selves and, you know, really get to dig deep, change what genre of art they do, or medium of art, I should say, right?
Interesting. You should bring that up.
Well, have you changed already? Have you changed what you submitted to what you're going to do? And then by the time you get there, I guarantee you in a week, everything's going to change.
Yeah.
Every artist that has.
I assumed that much. And obviously I had to submit a plan, some sort of loose plan as far as what my project would be and what kind of public event that I will bring to the park. But, you know, preparing artistically, I've been trying not to really make too many plans around that and be more open to the kind of the ancestors flowing through me and the energy in the sacred site, you know, sacred sites to drive my artistic outputs. Yeah, the plans have changed, I think, a few times. I'll still keep close to my main project, which is a book that I'm working on. And but I also have been very curious about other art forms, and I've never been much of a visual artist. And I've been very curious about this. So I've got this really great community of artistic friends, and I put a call out to them and I just said, hey, I'm going on this residency. I'm going to be writing, and I have several writing projects that I, you know, look forward to working with, but you know, I want to explore and experiment with some visual arts. And what are your recommendations for just somebody to play around? And they gave me, you know, lists of just really, you know, affordable and accessible art supplies, and people have donated. And I'm really excited to just like go out there and be and really tap into the inner child that maybe didn't have as many art classes as she should have had growing up. And just play with art in so many different ways. And I think that, you know, my words through my writings inspire visual art, and visual art inspires my words. And it is this, can become this feedback mechanism that grows. And I'm really excited to see what happens there.
I'm excited for you. I mean, I'm excited for NPAF, and NPAF, National Parks Arts Foundation, has done so much for veterans programs over the years in Gettysburg and all kinds of residencies for veterans. And it's been amazing interviewing them over the years. And you're the next one going out there. And I have this, just everything in my body is telling me you're going to do something with dirt. I have a funny weird feeling about that, like,
well,
not weird, like,
yeah,
weird.
I mean, I already have something planned with the dirt, so
you're
yeah.
Doing something in the dirt. All I know is Carissa's going in the dirt. I'm just saying. I don't know what it is
going in the dirt. I plan on doing my own dances and rituals, and you know, exploring that. Like I said earlier, I'm a poet that exists in the darkness, and my people, you know, climbed out from the underworld. Of course I'm going to be in the dirt and the land and give offerings and love and gratitude. I do have some ideas of how I want to artistically work with the dirt in the land in non-permanent ways. But I will go ahead and snap a selfie for you, Lisa, of me rolling around in the sand.
I know it's happening. I know what's happening. She's going to get down in the dirt. I love it. I love it. And we can't wait to follow up with you after your residency. I know, you know, just be out there, do your thing, get in the dirt. But honestly, I think this is going to be a very transformative experience. And I think those are experiences that we all need to have in our lives. And so I think that's going to be a wonderful example just of applying yourself to even apply to be an artist in residence. It gives people hope to do things beyond what the normal thing is. Hey,
yeah,
you know, this is an uncommon residency for sure.
Right. And, you know, none of this could have happened without Tanya Ortega.
Tanya's amazing.
She is a founder at National Parks Arts Foundation, and she has just, from the beginning, has just gone to bat for me and has been in my corner every turn. And she is incredible, and an incredible artist herself. But I really couldn't have navigated this, or even, I feel like Tanya has shown me more support than I even show. You know, it's kind of interesting because I haven't met Tanya. We've had several phone conversations and other exchanges, but she is supporting me in the way that my friends and my family and my partner are. You know, she is just all in, and I can very much feel that she wants me to succeed, not just artistically, but she really wants me to get out of this experience whatever it is that I'm looking for. And she's just really made this easy for me to navigate so that I can focus on the art, so I can focus on my ancestral connections. And I'm just incredibly grateful. Tanya is badass, and
you said it.
I'm lucky to be working with her. Yeah.
Ah, God, we are too. I mean, she's an amazing human being, but she's an artist herself, an amazing, incredible photographer. I love her photography. Oh, and really, with her background as an artist, she understands what artists go through, trying to get into galleries, going to a residency here and there, and she understands rejection. Yet I'm like looking at her art going like, what? She's like, I've experienced rejection. Every artist has, writer, musician, poet, everybody, right? We've all been through it, and it sucks. It sucks. And then when the la-di-da's go, ew, you just want to, like, shove
Right.
it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Well,
so she
and
understood,
there's
and
this
that was her
whole
thing, is she wanted a place where artists can actually do their craft and be able to have that time, because it's a month, right? And you get to be living in a park or right next to it, right? To depending on the residencies, because there's Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, Haleakala, Dry Tortugas, all these different parks. But she wants the artist to benefit. She wants the parks to benefit, and she understands the power that the arts have for parks, because a lot of people can't go to parks, and we're overpopulating our parks too. So there's also this other benefit of that with artists going, right?
Absolutely. And let's not, forget the accessibility to our land as indigenous people of that land, right?
Yes, that's huge and often forgotten to even be part of a conversation.
Yeah,
Really,
right. And
there's so many parks. It's changing over there a little bit. I mean, right now in California, in the Redwoods, even some of the state parks and some of those lands are being returned back to the indigenous people in the Redwoods area.
yeah,
Right now, it's
as they should.
happening, which is beautiful. It's beautiful. And it's going to help actually the native wildlife, honestly, because hello, the ancestral people who know and understand the land are going to be better than developers. Just saying, just me. This is my opinion. So don't yell at anybody but me. You can yell at me. I don't really, care, but I'll listen to you if you have something important to say. But I do. I will. I do. But what it is changing. Things are progressing, and that's what I think is why I brought up the anger thing. We can't make change through anger unless anger stirs passion to make things better,
Right.
and I think that's where the arts have this beautiful way of making things better. Storytelling is the oldest and most ancient form of communication that we have. Storytelling has been what teaches you life lessons in life. It of all cultures, storytelling and the arts have been prevalent through everything, and that's how we can progress. And it taps into anger. Anger is prevalent. Emotions, crying, pain, happiness, joy, all of it is part of it, and it allows you, and this is the big part of art, to not stop in one emotion. You're supposed to move from emotion to emotion to emotion, not have one forever. You can't smile all day long. You can't be angry all day long. Doesn't work. Our bodies won't do it. So we're supposed to move from emotion to emotion to emotion to understand and get the balance. And that, I think, is where the arts lie. And sometimes one gets to be overpowering than the other one for a
Yeah.
bit.
And if we're
Does that make
lucky,
sense? Did I make
yeah,
sense on
totally.
that?
Yeah.
It sounded weird. I felt like a bee
No,
bopping on flowers going,
that makes
this is
sense.
the angry flower. This is the happy flower. This is the
Right.
pissy flower. I just talked to a winemaker saying, well, now we can say cat piss is a smell in wine. I'm like, what? Okay, well,
Interesting.
all
But
right.
I
So.
think that, I think what artists bring that's special is one of the things is that we can transform these emotions and these feelings like anger, and we can alchemize those into common language, and language, whether that is visual, whether that is sonic, whether that is literary, and open up these portals of language. And for the purpose of action, and granted, some poems that just want to make you feel good or whatever, but I really hope that I can transform my feelings and my experience into a key that opens up a portal of language that then, can kind of illuminate a path of action.
And also be a release for others that may need that.
Right. And not just a release, but a relatability. of you know, loneliness is so hard on us, and veterans tend to live, I mean, I'll speak for myself, it is a very lonely life. Even if you have family and friends and community around you, it's very few people can even fathom what you've gone through and how it affects you. And so to be able to put something out artistically, I've heard, you know, many veterans have come up to me after shows and just have told me that, you know, they could relate and they felt seen. And that is incredibly important because we need to stick together, not just veterans, but all of us need to stick together. We need to be unified. We need to break down these systems of oppression and capitalism and supremacy that continue to divide us. We need to come together. And I think that's what the arts does for us, is unify us as we take on the impending, like, inevitable almost dooms of what will happen to our planet, you know?
I think the arts are just it's the better way to go, you know, when you look at it at the end of the day. People, I mean, look what happened to the Capitol building, right? The storming of the Capitol, right? And all that anger, that didn't make any positive change. Did you see any positive change come from
Well, you
storming
know,
the
it was
Capitol
totally
building?
executed. So, you know,
But you know what I mean? Yeah, it was, yeah, all of that. But it still came from a crazy rage that was stirred up from the pot. Somebody stirred the pot. We all know that. But the pot got hot, and the people connected to the pot had the rage. And it can be executed or not executed, but the rage is the fuel.
The
And
rage
that's
isn't
it.
always bad, though. Why
No,
can't
it's not.
we? Where's the rage? Where's the outrage for our climate, for environmental issues? Where's the outrage around,
You're
you know,
not
that
allowed to
most
have,
people can't afford to pay their rent? Where's
you
the
can't.
outrage around our healthcare system? Where, you know what I mean? Like
Well,
rage and
that's the
anger.
inconvenient truth. That's what I always talk about. It's the inconvenient truth. You know, I think Al Gore with climate change kind of really did that. The inconvenient truth is a very good term because it's true. And we've done so much on what's happening with the weather and the climate change and injustice racially. On all levels, women, I mean, everything, right? And the reality is, if you beat a drum and you're too loud and we need to do this, then people turn off. Don't tell me what to do. That's basically the thing. And so all the language has had to change and change and change. Well, storming the Capitol also didn't work. No change has been made on that level, other than we go like we've got some crazies in our country, you know, and we've been able to really identify a lot of different. So in some ways, you know, we're really seeing some truths of our country that we
Well,
don't
and
want to see and know. But you know, it's so the arts are a way of. Here's the thing, I call it the sneak attack. It is. It's a sneak attack. A song gets in your head, under your skin. A poem does. You'll remember it. You go back to it. A story connects with you. You can watch a movie and it will stick with you for days. You read a book and you are still living it. And you even sometimes forget that you're in your own reality because you're still in that zone. So that's how the arts transcend. So it's this beautiful way of sticking with you, and sometimes you have to sit with it and chew on it for days for you to work it out. That's good art. You know, that's good art, no matter what genre it is. And sometimes a painting takes you immediately and you've got it, and it blows your mind right there. That's good art too. You know, it's all good art. It's just according to what connects with you. And it can take you days. It could take you years, like we were saying earlier. But it does transcend, and it's a better way. And yes, it can have anger, it can have drama, it can be dark, nasty, dirty, all of that. And it's pretty cool when it is, but
It really is.
It is because deep down we all have it. like people going against comedians right now. I'm like, stop it. Comedians, they are telling the truth of stuff we don't want to hear about, and then we call them out for saying it. Oh, don't. That's not right, you know. So what are we supposed to do? Where are we now in the arts? Are we going to now start, you know, cutting down the arts of saying what you can paint, what you can write, what
Well,
you
we've
can
already done
sing?
that. We've already censored so much. I mean, I
See
think
how much Tanya does to allow you in the park?
right,
You're
right. Yeah, I've been censored, but think about, the artists come before me. I mean, just take graffiti art as an example, which is one of my most favorite art forms. And, that art form was used as a form of resistance, as a form of code, as a form of working around and putting out your message in an oppressive culture, and we've made it illegal, right? There is so much art that is censored, and there is so much that continues to be censored. As soon as so many of us start telling the truths and start shining lights on these blind spots that people have and start really uncovering and pulling back the curtain, right? Like our authorities and our authoritarians get very nervous around that. And then they double down by with more oppression and with, utilizing the police in ways that they shouldn't. And, it continues and it gets more and more violent. But it is artists that look in the face of that violence and that fear, and they say, I can't not do my art. I have to. And, this is our mission. And I think it's really important, especially in social and political aspects, artists have a critical role.
I agree. I agree. And I love what you're doing. I love that you're going to go to Chaco because you're going to be transcending all kinds of things.
Thank
Your
you.
personal life, you're going to be transcending your ancestral life, which is your personal life too,
Yes.
right? And really telling the truth of life there. It's going to be pure. Whatever comes out is going to be pure. You're very straight up, like, there's no BSing around you. Let's put it that way. And
No. There's
yeah, no, and
I'm
I
too
love
old for
that.
that anyway. So, yeah.
No, yeah, you've got integrity, and I love that
Thank
about
you.
you. And I look forward to reconvening with you when you come back from Chaco. And oh my gosh, that's going to be quite a conversation. That's
It
going to be
will.
awesome.
Who knows where that could be? I've been telling my friends that I might come back transformed into a coyote or maybe a rattlesnake, maybe a little bit of
You
both.
might come back as a green alien,
I
like a
might.
green.
I might not come back. Jeez, like, there's.
Oh, you might get beamed up. It
Yeah.
could
Well,
happen. It
I'm
could
here for
happen.
it. Whatever
Hey,
happens, happens.
if you get beamed up, seriously, I tell everybody this. If you get beamed up, like anybody dies and they, like, you better come back. You come
Okay.
talk to me. I
I
talk to
will.
dead people all the time. Now that sounds weird, but
I'll
I do.
know. It doesn't sound
But
weird at all.
no, I talk to like people I know and stuff, and maybe it's just people in my head, but whatever. But I'm serious. If you get beamed up as an alien, you come get me, man. Like, I want to know. I want to know.
I will.
I want every. I want to know what you're eating for dinner. I want to know
Okay.
everything. Like, I'm not kidding. I want to know. I really believe that we have them around us all the time, and we're all part of it. I don't
I
think
think
we're
that,
not aliens. I don't think. I mean,
and
who the
I
hell
just
do we think
don't,
we are?
there's so much unknown, but there's so much that my ancestors knew that we don't know now. And I'm here for it. I'm here for whatever happens,
Oh,
Chaco. And that's the thing is that we as a society are so afraid of what's different. We've been talking a lot about anger in this interview, but I
yeah. I
mean,
don't
we
know
need
why
to
it
talk
came
about
out. It just came
fear,
out. Well,
right?
I think fear and anger are the same.
Right, yeah. And I'm not afraid of those kinds of things, and unfortunately, of course, if we had other beings from other worlds. I mean, you know, a lot of indigenous people would see that as a blessing.
I
And,
think it'd be
you know,
cool.
most people see it as a threat. And I don't understand that. I don't understand it as all at
It's
all.
exciting to me. It's exciting to me. Like if you, I mean, you have any experiences like that, I want to know and send them my way. Like, you know, I
I
just don't want that
will.
other probe thing people talk about, but no.
Yeah.
And I think,
I
and just
might
to
not
go back.
share them with the world, Lisa, but I'll share them with you because I don't want to end up in like some government bunker with like them
Oh my
doing
God, now we're gonna have a
shit on
Quentin
me.
Tarantino movie any minute now. You know, seriously, but I want to go back on the anger thing. I think, you know, here's the deal. If you stand up and speak out about something, it is automatically always brought into with anger. So I think that's where I brought it up was, and then we just kept talking about it even more. When you stand up for something, a lot of times people just think you're a pissed off person, not you specifically, but in just in general. So standing up does not mean anger. Yes, you can have passion and some anger that came from something or pain or those emotions, but it doesn't mean you don't stand up. And it doesn't mean that you're wacky and angry to just stand up. You know what I mean? There's reasons to stand up and speak truth. And that's an important thing in life. And sometimes anger or pain or even joy will make you do it. Love. All of those strong emotions will get you to do that or not. And the or not sometimes is more deadly than speaking the truth. And
I
that's the
agree.
important lesson of today, boys and
Right.
girls. No,
Silence,
see, I did not mean boys and girls. I did not
silence
mean that as a put down, but I mean
is
it. I mean it as in anger is a healthy thing. You can't live without anger. You can't live without fear. You can't live without joy and love and all these emotions we have, but we have to balance them out. And sometimes one gets to reign over the other because it depends on what's going on in the world, what's happening in your personal space in that time of day. And sometimes you'll see a piece of art or read it or listen or watch or read anything, and it can piss you off, create anger. Why is it creating anger? Is there an injustice to you, to friends, to family, to other people, animals, something you don't even know, but you go and see an injustice? Then maybe that's tapping into your heart to do something.
Or is there guilt, right?
Oh, you went there. You did it.
Yeah, of course I went there. I ain't scared. You know, I think that, you know,
We ain't
transporting,
perfect. We're humans.
right?
Humans suck.
We're
We
humans,
do bad
and
things. We
we
do.
need to transform our anger and transform our guilt into utilizing our privileges to uplift, you know, other people who are most impacted by the damage being done to our lands and our societies and our cultures. Like, I feel like we have to do that. And most people have some sort of privilege that can be used to bring our siblings up, you know, and to protect them too. And what I find in my work is there is a lot of guilt. There's a lot of guilt as to what certain, you know, European American ancestors did to my people and are doing to other people all around the world. And I have a lot of respect for the allies who transform that guilt into positive action instead of, you know, doubling down on that and turning it into, you know, violence and racist fueled or classist fueled violence. And as far as arts go, you know, we are the alchemists of society. And in our ways of documenting that. And it's more important than ever that Indigenous and Black and Indigenous voices are heard through our art and through our work, period, whether that is political work, educational work, artistic work, it is very important that we are heard. It is very important that we don't just ask for platforms, but we create our own platforms and we step on those platforms together. And we do this for the collective liberation. And arts, because historically, because we haven't, like, Black and Indigenous people haven't had access to or quality access to systems like media and other societal systems, right? We have historically leaned on our art, and we've historically been able to tell our stories and our histories through oral tradition, through other kinds of visual art forms, through theater, through all of that, right? And it's very important. And even when we do that, right? Even when we do that, why is my art called folk art? But the, you know, paler person's art is called fine art, right? That's by intention. And I just think it's really important, not just for artists to use our platform, but for us to come together with other Black, Indigenous, and people of color for our collective liberation in what is happening in the state of this world. And right now, especially for climate justice and to resist the genocide in Palestine.
And women.
Absolutely.
I got to bring that up. And folk art, by the way, a lot of it is also deemed on white women doing art that is traditional for being farmers' wives or whatever. They have been like, oh, that's folk art.
Right.
Or crafting. But they had an outlet at some point, whether it's needlepoint or quilting and things like that. I'm sorry, these were women like that lived on a farm in the middle of nowhere, sometimes went across and part of the genocide too, right? But they also just were trying to survive. And then their art is deemed as folk art because they were women. That's why I brought up women at the beginning too, because women in art and poetry and things like that was always like, oh, that's the flowery stuff that you do as a girl, you know, girly stuff. So, wow, we've had quite a conversation. Carissa, have a wonderful and just the best experience in
Thank
Chaco.
You so much.
Everyone,
I really appreciate this conversation too.
I know. Wow, we did it. We did a marathon conversation, I think.
I loved it. I could go on forever.
I know. I know. It's like we haven't fixed the world yet. We've got more to do.
That's okay. We're making plans. We're making plans. You make it very easy to converse and talk with you, Lisa. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Were we
still planning on
Thank you for joining us here on Big Blend Radio's first Friday Toast to the Arts and Park Show with the National Parks Arts Foundation. Learn more about their amazing park artist residency programs. Go to nationalparksartsfoundation.org. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.